Hey everybody, and welcome to the IsCast. This is number.
I don't know how to start off with that way.
We don't know the number.
Yeah, don't start. Come on, man. Keep going.
It's just the month. It's easy.
Oh, so there's number 10.
Yeah, we started in January.
So I'm David. We have Wade, Lee, and Ben all here.
Sean couldn't make it, unfortunately.
We'll have to get him next month. Yeah.
So we are here. It is October 2013, and many exciting things to talk about today. Lots going on.
Should we note that we're drinking wine at 10:50 in the morning?
That's also
we started before 10:50.
I'm sure my parents who listen to this podcast will be very happy to hear that I'm drinking wine.
Very important development. Very important. Okay, so one of the main things we've been doing that we talked about before is the 3D printer. We've come a long way in that. It's been one hell of a journey. We didn't go out and just simply buy one. Lee's been trucking away and actually building the pieces from scratch.
Like a boss.
And he brought he brought his progress here today for us to look at. You want to talk about what it's been like so far and what we have?
Yeah, so it took forever to find a laser cutter. And then when I found one through the Hack Factory, which is a great place, they just got it. And so it's been like 2 months for them to set it up, calibrate it, and I finally I weaseled my way in to get early access, and then when
there,
I
there's like 30 people behind you, right?
Yeah, yeah, like everybody's just like, oh, when is it gonna be ready? When is it gonna be ready? And it's like broken like 3 times now, and one of the times was when I was using it, so that was awesome. But yeah, it's good. I still got a couple pieces we need. I need Sean to come down. I'm trying to get him to come Wednesday.
What happens when a laser cutter breaks? Does the laser fires just kind of like turn and then
the laser goes crazy and burns everything in the room?
If I'm correct in thinking, it is a CO2 laser.
Yes.
And so actually, the laser head is not in the moving part. It's actually reflected via a mirror.
There's
down.
Super cool.
So the laser, I think it's underneath it. Is it behind?
It's in the back. There's three mirrors. It's in the back. It goes to one corner, the other corner, and then to the head, which shoots it down.
Yeah, it's a really, really fascinating thing to watch.
Yeah.
And to make work.
We got some video that we're going to make a vibe.
Oh, yeah. Because this is an audio podcast, can we throw up at some point a picture of just what we have built of the body and throw that up on the Intersection Facebook page?
I can try.
Cool.
But so basically the parts you cut, they were the outer shell of the printer, the frame.
Yeah, part of it is the shell and then...
some of the inner components.
There are some working components, like the things that hold the rods for the head in the extruder and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's funny, looking at it now, I mean, it's obviously a durable, assembly, but it looks kind of like cardboard.
That's why I kind of like it, the look.
Yeah,
I like the burnt edges too from the laser.
It does look a little like the first MakerBot replicator, because the first one was made out of wood like that.
Yeah. It's based on the Altimaker, and since then they, like a couple weeks ago, they released their second version, and they went away from wood also.
Mm-hmm. What are they using?
I don't know what it is. It's probably aluminum.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that too shiny, though? Or I guess, how are they cutting that, then? If not with the laser cutter.
Well, there are different lasers that you can cut metal with. And again, if you dull it enough, you could probably do something with it.
Yeah.
But like, there are laser cutters, that really fancy
that
ones.
That do metal,
That do metal.
Cool. So maybe, in a month or so, we'll be printing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As soon as possible.
Yep. That's the idea. How much more do you have to do at the Hack Factory to finish up these pieces?
David has to learn.
I have to learn the lathe.
Some tools, lathe, the mill that they call it. Is there an official name for that?
The lathe.
The vertical
milling machine.
Vertical milling machine.
Yeah, it's really intense because there's a part, a cylindrical part that we need to sort of give it two chamfered edges.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to flatten it on two sides to fit within one of the wooden parts that leave cut. So yeah, I need to. Apparently, there's a handful of people that know how to use it. So we're going in on Wednesday. So with that, I'm gonna hopefully be learning that and the lathe, both on Wednesday. So it's gonna be a
busy
night.
Hopefully, there's people there.
So we can finish the last two machine necessary parts. So we can be well on our way.
Yeah, there's a couple parts. I still need to figure out the bed system. I'll probably use like a glass pane for that.
Mm.
I think I can just get something from like a picture frame, like Goodwill, and just cut up the glass.
Is that going to be durable enough?
Oh, yeah. glass. Yeah. it just needs to be super flat. And I need like bronze bushing. They're called bushings, mm-hmm. like sleeve bearings for the X and Y axis things. I've been having trouble. I found a good site that has something that'll work. I don't know. I hate ordering items from websites that just have like really crappy websites.
Yeah, just very suspicious right off the bat.
I know it's probably not that bad, and like, you know, they'll get the order and stuff, but
like, is it like a site that has like a million like artworks like on the top, like 100% like guaranteed satisfaction, like voted best website?
No, it doesn't have that. It seems pretty legit, but it's just
click here for performance enhancing pills.
It's not designed at all, but
okay.
Could you give an estimate as far as like how much money you've put into it now so far?
Like
$1,100.
Which is pretty, like, the kit is what, 17?
Yep, the kit, not assembled, so you can buy the Altimaker not assembled as a kit for $1,700, and then assembled is in the 2000s, and the MakerBot is, like, $2,500.
Yeah, for the newest one. I think you can get the old MakerBots for, like, I think they're 18 or something. Yeah, like, they're still expensive.
Really expensive.
So we're getting something similar to the MakerBot for...
It's hard to compare it, though, because of you have to look at the build volume. And the resolution of it, because you can build printers for like 600, but then they're like
they're small and they don't have good resolution.
Yeah, they're like 6 inches by 6 inches, like build volume.
Dude, this thing is huge. It's like the same size as the
what is it? Companion Cube.
No. it's like the same size as that 3D printer for the Doritos Locos Tacos.
I think that
was smaller. I think that was
you didn't like that commercial?
I think it's so scandal.
No, but then the next thing now we have to build as the companion to this is we have to try and make our own version of the MakerBot digitizer, which is their laser scanner that you get I think you get an 8x8x8 sort of cube of space, and you can put an object on this turntable, and then there's two lasers that scan it. So it's sort of their companion to the MakerBot for the people who don't know how to 3D model from scratch. So if you have something already,
that's not the point of the. To me, the 3D printers is making things that don't exist.
Yeah.
No, so why would I just want to replicate a statue that I already have?
I was making a joke. As I said, it was for people who don't know how to 3D model.
Yeah.
Okay. Other stuff we got going on is a film called The Writer that we're going to be helping to shoot, and we're also helping to build costumes for.
Yeah. So we met up with. I don't know how many people they have. It's two main guys, the Woolly
Rhino Productions. Woolly, it's
Rhino.
Kellen and Mike.
Rhino. Woolly Rhino.
Rhino. I have trouble with R's.
Apparently.
Yeah. they're legit. They have an office in the Hubbard Broadcasting Building.
Did he win an Emmy? I saw a picture with him holding an Emmy.
Midwest Emmy.
Midwest.
I think I was curious about that too, as far as like what it actually is.
So they have sub Emmys?
Yeah, I think
so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, like regional ones. That's a lot of times when local news stations talk about how they've won an Emmy, a lot of times those deal with like the regional ones.
Sure.
Gotcha.
They should clarify that.
Yeah.
So anyway, they saw our Halo video and they wanted to commission us to make a couple different costumes. One of them is like a futuristically police military looking guy. The Guardian, and then another one is the Wild Man that David's working on.
Yeah.
So Lee and David are kind of spearheading those ones.
Yeah. And a gun.
And the gun. Yeah. So how's that been going in the midst of all this 3D printer business?
It's good.
Cool.
All right.
This week, it's going to be work week.
Okay.
For them. Because now that's all done. I'm waiting for other people now.
Have the parts come in for the Guardian?
We just got the vest?
The vest. Mm-hmm. We just got a tactical vest that just came in.
I can give you the... I have the forearms that Mike gave me last time we met upstairs. The
oh, okay. Upstairs. Well, yeah, that needs to go to Lee.
Oh,
I'm dealing with the Wild Man. And so the Wild Man, as a maybe title explanatory, is a wild... I think Radagast the Brown.
A man from
except
nature.
Not a human.
Well, he's wearing bark.
Yeah, he's wearing... He's like, well,
it's like an ant
he
more
is,
than
yeah,
Radagast.
Yeah.
What's that ant name?
Treebeard?
Treebeard. Yeah, I think Treebeard.
Yeah, so
I really like the mask he made. He took a hockey helmet and he like hot glued all this bark on it. And he
moss,
and moss and stuff. And he had these cool knots in the bark that appear in the eye and mouth holes. And it's really kind of like somber looking and just like I don't
made
know,
me think of Majora's Mask or like the
that's what I was gonna think of. Yeah, something out of Zelda.
Yeah, which is probably why I like it. But, so we're going to be shooting that starting this weekend, I think.
19th is the first. I'm looking at the schedule right now.
Oh, is it next week?
Yep. The first shooting day is 19th.
Okay. I must have,
sweet.
I must have got the schedule wrong.
Got a week.
Yep.
All right. Oh, wait. Was that because we're shooting stuff not including the Guardian first, right? That's what they said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We got a couple of weeks.
Yeah, but we wanted it to be ready to be shown and critiqued and stuff like that.
Oh, sure. So that's going to be shot on Red, which is going to be fun. Yep. The Red one.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a lot of cool toys, a really nice tracking dolly, a steady arm, which I don't know if they can use with the Red.
Focus puller.
An automatic, wireless focus puller, which is super cool.
Yeah.
So, I guess we'll be talking about that more next time. Moving into regional stuff. So we've got the Minneapolis Underground Film Fest.
Yep, that's coming up on I think, does that open today? I think.
Why is it underground?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really familiar.
It ends today. That's what it is. I don't know why it's underground. It looks like it's a lot of, experimental films and short films and, like very indie.
Mm-hmm.
The Minneapolis Film Fest is already pretty indie, but this is the even more hipster indie version.
That's what they should call it.
The hipster film fest. The
hipster film fester.
Well, if they were true hipsters, they can't call themselves hipsters, so... You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll get
the
into
non-hipster
hipsters.
Film festival.
Yeah. The totally unhipster film fest. So we've participated GTA. In one, which is the 48-hour film festival.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I would like us to do more.
That sucked.
The film, the 48-hour film festival.
You guys were gone.
Oh, I know.
You
I
abandoned did. Us.
I know. It would have been a lot. It would have been a lot more fun if I didn't have to work two weddings that weekend.
Yeah. If I didn't have to work at all that weekend.
Yeah. So I think if and when we do another one, I'll be more free for it.
Better be.
But I would like to say that considering all that went wrong with it, the actors not being able to show up and all that, I think it went well.
Yeah, that was... When that happened, it was just like,
nothing against those actors or whatever, and they have, expressed interest in wanting to do work with us again.
Yeah.
But, just sort of the way that whole weekend went down, nothing personal against any of you, it again sort of felt like, back into college filmmaking, everything that could go wrong went wrong,
yeah.
And you had to change every one of your plans to deal with it, which is like happened.
It was nice
weather
though.
It was weather.
Yeah, the weather was great. So that's the one thing we had going for us.
Although the when we were doing pickups with Dragging Ben, it was supposed to be cloudy and the sun kept coming out.
Mm.
So we got to work eventually, but it's funny because I remember when we shot for the teaser, it went a lot smoother than for the 40-hour film fest.
Yeah,
and it was during the weekend too. It was under
except
tight
for the gun breaking.
Well, I think,
but even that, the guy was right there with the super glue.
Yeah.
Fate was on our side.
Mm-hmm.
I think with the shooting of the teaser, though, I mean, that was much more scheduled, though.
Yeah, it was.
Whereas with the 40-hour film festival.
Right. We planned out exactly what we wanted, but the 48-hour, we had to, plan in 6 hours.
And that's a difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Yeah. But next time, we'll be better.
We will.
Yeah.
We will be better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was nice to have all our gear, the Tascam, the lights, the camera, the nice tripod, everything. So that helped out a lot, I thought.
Yeah.
And Lee and I were creative with our handheld, pulling kind of thing. I was standing on one time Lee was pulling me
on.
It was but it worked.
Yeah.
That's the point. I mean, a lot of stuff.
It was hard to get the speed right.
Mm-hmm. I think
because of the the static friction that you have to overcome.
Yeah.
We had to okay, I'm pulling now. Okay, roll. Time it.
My favorite shot is still when Katie just suddenly appears over Ben's shoulder and smashes his head.
Yeah.
Because she just, I was like, I want to see the devil in your eyes. She's like, okay.
Should I be worried?
Yes.
I love the shots where she's looking at the camera while she's smashing Ben. She's like,
ah. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I wish for something like that. It would be so, because it's so, it has to be so fast, it would be so fun to have behind the scenes for it, but there's just no time to do anything.
It would be fun
to
just
consider
a,
doing that like that.
Break a breakaway glass or whatever they call that. Stunt glass or.
Oh, sugar glass?
Object that you can just.
Yeah, it's sugar
fake glass. Beer bottles and stuff.
Yeah. Well, once I ate a shard of sugar glass because someone just I was cleaning up the floor after someone had smashed a sugar glass beer bottle.
And we know that David can't refuse sugar.
And I can't refuse sugar. And so they said, oh, and I was saying, oh, this is so stupid that we broke this bottle here, because now we have this glass all over the floor that, you know, someone could step on. It's like, oh, no, that's not real glass. It's sugar. I go, really? And so I pick up the piece and I take a huge bite out of it, and it tasted awful. Yeah. It was disgusting. Well, I'm sure there's some bad stuff.
I'm sure they don't make it to taste
good. No, it's like sugar and glue, basically. So it's some pretty nasty stuff. It's
not just sugar.
So there's some other films that are being done in the, or have been done in the area.
Yeah, no, with, I think we mentioned last time that I work at Cinequipped. And so we're, you know, a production rental house, so we know we have cameras and lights and sound and everything. And
do you guys have any competitors in the region?
I think there's basically one called Lighthouse.
Lighthouse?
I think. We're the main one though.
Okay.
And it has changed a lot in recent years, because, you know, there was a point where at Cinequipped, like, it was like in a week maybe there were four orders going out, mm-hmm. but they were all for film stuff. So these orders were absolutely gargantuan that could take days to prepare mm-hmm. for somebody. And now, you know, because it's all switched to this small kind of indie filmmaking and independent stuff now, it's like, you know, people rent a lens for their, you know, their 5D Mark III to shoot a film on.
Sure.
But it's been cool that I have seen a couple of feature indie films come through. You know, one of them that came through.
What I was just wondering what they're renting, like, for equipment.
Like, was Cinequipped?
Yeah, like in a legit, you know, production. Like, film. Not just not just lenses. What are they actually doing? Film or doing digital?
No, but nobody does film anymore. It's all but gone. And like, we have a refrigerator full of film. We store the film in a refrigerator.
Do they have an Arri 435? That's a 35mm.
Yes,
they do.
Yeah, okay, we have 35, 16, and Super 16.
I'm pretty sure when Eric shot Anna's Playground, he rented everything from Cinequipped, and they used it in Arri 435. So they might have rented that from Cinequipped.
Yeah, it probably was. I'm sure. Yeah, like, nobody does that here. Like, it's interesting though. The NFL still shoots in 16mm for certain stuff.
That's absurd.
So, like, I find out what the NFL comes in the air of. I don't know what exactly they're filming. What if it's, you know, what part of the game or what? But it's one of the deal they have with Cinequipped is whenever they're in the area that we pull a order for a Super 16 camera, and we have, in case the one they have fails, we have one ready for them.
Wow.
So that was weird. But yeah, no, a lot of, like, production companies, you know, especially with where prices for cinema cameras have come down, you know, a lot of people, like, people have Scarlets, like Red Scarlets that they shoot on, or, you know, something like, we have an Arri Alexa that is a very popular camera. We have that and the Red 1 or 2, like, high-end cinema cameras, and those, for a lot of the big orders, like, they usually either get that or they have their own already, and they get, like, we have Cook lenses, which are these really, really great prime lenses.
Oh, you've talked about them before.
Yeah, they're really amazing.
So these high end, low end, high compared to us. My computer's not plugged in. Wait, can you plug it?
Please.
Only us can hear that, but the computer announced itself that it was running low on power.
You got that. Lee, I inquire your attention. You get to do.
I did that when you told me to do that.
Oh yeah.
It only does in those major events.
Yeah, you get custom alerts.
I need to talk to you guys how to set that up.
For the longest time, mine was, yo, bitch, look at this shit.
So anyways, these high-end films compared to us. So what were there's like three of them, you said?
Yeah, there were three. I don't know what they were specifically working on.
So you don't know the names of them. There was Dear White People.
Yeah, Dear White People is one of them.
And then some other ones.
I'll try and find out for the next podcast.
So what kind of cameras are those guys renting?
I think Dear White People, they had their own pair of Red Epics.
Red Epic.
That they had. And I think, though they did have for a couple of the weeks that they were filming, they had our Red One out as their backup camera.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're shooting on Epics.
You know what's interesting? I was reading this article about, you know, the show Wilfred?
Mm-hmm.
With Elijah Wood. That show
is a weird show.
Yeah. But that show was shot on a 5D.
Oh, wow.
Granted, it's like a custom, like, rig they have set up for it, but it's crazy that, like, a mainstream TV show is shot on a DSLR.
Now, wasn't Ben saying the last season of House was shot on DSLR?
Correct.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I know, and that's, we have a couple of 5D Mark IIIs, and that's, you know, very popular camera.
Or I think they might have switched to a Nikon, or some people are using Nikon, some people are using 5Ds, but it's just, it's crazy that, like, granted, they are, like, a few $1,000s, but even compared to a Red or a film camera, it's a fraction of the cost.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool.
But I wonder why the choice was there, because I'm like, at least for house, the less of the house, why would you go to a Canon SLR?
DSLR.
Or DSLR. Yeah, sorry. When they have the budget to stay with a higher quality camera.
It's cheaper.
Save money,
I guess.
Yeah, if you're if you're
set up, moving around, breakdown.
Yeah, and you know, with the cost improvements, and you probably wouldn't get a whole lot of, you wouldn't get resolution requirement like changes. Like the big thing, like Arri's, like they shoot in 2K, but they're incredibly, incredibly popular cameras to shoot on because they have a very specific look to them. They have this Arri look, this quality of the image, mm-hmm. which is why they're very popular. Even, you know, when compare something against, like, say, a Red Epic, which shoots, you know, 3K higher resolution than it does. So that's probably one of the other thing you have to balance out if you're deciding to switch from a cinema camera of some kind to a DSLR.
What would you say that Arri look is? Is it a more like noir kind of look?
Can we filter it and put it into like?
Well, all the films I've seen shot on an Arri, well, not films, but Elementary was shot on an Arri, mm-hmm. and so was Eden. And you know, watching, standing, you know, back in Video Village watching them shoot, it looked kind of, maybe it's because the scenes were a little darker, but it just seemed mm-hmm. like a darker image and more mysterious looking image.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I get from it.
I'm not sure. I've been wanting to just pull out the Arri and shoot, like, just like walk through Cinequip and shoot something to get a look at it, and you know, compare that to shooting some stuff on the Red and on the C500 and the 5D. I have a lot of other stuff I need to take care of, so it's
okay.
Sort of falling by the wayside at this point. Well, but it's one something I want to do, and I would love to show you guys when I have all the footage together, and you can talk about it.
Yeah, let us know when you're doing that, and also when we can shoot the high frame rate camera, because that would be a lot of fun.
Oh, the Fastek, the high speed one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one's gonna be really fun.
Moving on, because I really want to get to this. I'm excited. We just saw Gravity last night, and IMAX 3D. At 10 o'clock, and IMAX 3D.
3D.
It was crazy. All right, first reactions, David. Go.
I was very impressed by it overall. I thought you definitely could tell the Alfonso Cuarón. I don't know how to say his last name.
The director.
Yeah, the director. He's a fan of long shots, and there were some really, really long shots in there. And granted, it is faked long shots because a lot of it was, you know, digitally created.
Yeah, but it's still orchestrated.
Yeah, but it's orchestrated that way, and it's like, it, you know, there are some, a lot of times when like you have to you pause for a moment and think, oh, they haven't changed a shot lately. But no, I was really impressed by it. I think most overall, the visual effects looked fantastic. This was my first IMAX film that I've seen. I've only seen OmniMax before. I thought it was really fun. I'm curious if it was true IMAX.
Do you notice the difference?
Well, the screen's bigger.
Yeah. But like, did it have an impact on you?
It did, yeah. I don't know. I'll have to think about that more. I think I have to see a few more IMAX films. I think there's a benefit to shooting in IMAX depending on what you're doing. I think for this kind of the vastness of space, and like there's some really brilliant shots where you see like you either see George Clooney or Sandra Bullock way in the distance, mm-hmm. and surrounded by stars all around, which I think there were some really beautiful shots.
Hopefully the star fields were all correct for
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah.
Okay. good first reaction. Yep. Ben, what'd you think?
I love space. I'm inspired by space, and I think this movie really captured the an experience of space. I incredibly enjoyed it. I noticed the long shots thing. I think the thing I also noticed a little bit more that probably made the movie for me was the soundtrack and the music and the sound mm-hmm. editing to it.
Yeah, the sound was awesome because they, as far as like science wise, like
it was approved because
that's why they had the text in the beginning. They're like, air has no air pressure and no oxygen, so it can't.
Air pressure.
Space. Sorry. and so it can't carry sound. And so part of the movie was that it reflected that.
Yeah, and also it's when they made the transitions too. Like they would be moving from outside of Sandra Bullock's helmet, and they would pass through her visor, mm-hmm. and it would change because she's in
the sound
in,
would change,
in air, so you hear things differently, and then it would move out and it would get all quiet.
Yeah, so like outside it would be like the sound seemed like it was through her like helmet mic and like the mm-hmm. vibrations mm-hmm. through mm-hmm. her suit, Yeah. Because there's air inside the suit, so it would pick up on some of that
stuff. Yeah, they did a really good job with that. And obviously, they tried really hard to make it very shocking that this crazy, destructive, like, apocalyptic stuff can happen around you and not make a sound. It's all silent.
I felt like it was scarier to me.
Yeah, it was. Like, because it's so...
The silent explosions were just like...
Because it's it seems so unnatural.
Yeah.
Like the debris flying by and the space shuttle is like completely being destroyed and all this crazy is happening and all you can hear is her breathing.
Yeah. Because she can't hear it. So it's like, there's stuff going behind you.
Well,
like,
one of the most haunting parts with her breathing is when there's a point when she's losing oxygen in her suit and the way she's breathing, which it sounds like it's that sort of that short gaspy, like when you don't have any air left. Yeah. And that's like the only sound you heard was her like scrambling on the outside of a space station and that sound. I don't know if we should warn out to the listeners. We may get a little spoilery.
That's fine.
There's possible. Just going to throw that out there.
Yeah.
You know, maybe skip like 5 minutes ahead and see where we are then.
I think the best part for me was that the movie really captured the beauty and the danger of space. And
humanity. They kept going in between that. Like, oh, this is beautiful. This is wonderful. And then, holy shit.
I think my favorite scene. My favorite scene was when she finally got back to the ISS. And she just took off her suit and everything like that.
Just kind of sat there.
Yeah, but there was a lot of imagery there because the way that she turned at the very end, it was like she got into
like a baby.
She got into fetal position. 2001. Back in the womb, back safe where.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the article I read, it was the director said the story was supposed to be like a reincarnation story.
Hmm. Oh yeah, makes sense.
So that's. I guess part of that too is her as a character, because of her traumatic experience on Earth and going through the experience in space, like it kind of rebirthed her into this new form, give her this new life.
Yeah.
So that's with that shot,
I question if you could get out of that spacesuit that quickly.
Well,
she got off really, really fast.
Into the ISS. It seemed like a near future.
Yeah.
So, but, because I don't think the Chinese have
no
space station. It is planned.
So
it's not up yet, planned. But it's planned.
So, I think they may be implying because they had like HUD systems on the helmet visor. So like, they're kind of saying like, oh, things have advanced.
Yeah,
which is weird because so they're they operating from a shuttle, which has been retired.
I think the HUD system
still a really smart design though. So.
And we still have two. Doesn't NASA still have two that they keep on they're on like ready alert? I thought I'd heard that somewhere. No, okay.
But anyway,
I saw that one in Florida. It's awesome.
Yeah, the movie was effing awesome.
Yeah,
it was
recommended. I would definitely recommend 3D because the way they filmed it, just like Avatar, like they really thought about it and it was planned, not just like after the fact they threw in some 3D with some people in computers.
Yeah, it was shot for 3D. And Lee, we're talking about this last night and I kind of agreed. A lot of the coolest shots that looked the most effective in 3D weren't necessarily ones, like a lot of times they'll have like someone's face and the background will be blurry and it'll appear 3D. It's like they're forcing the 3D. Mm-hmm. But there's other shots where she's on the beach at the end where it's not like anything like with pulled, you know, with shallow depth of field, it's just her on a beach, and it looks really cool because her body is like coming out at you, and it's not forced upon you by the camera.
Yeah, to me, the 3D that's really successful is just I feel like the object there that's in front of me, and I sense the depth.
Yeah,
and especially like rain scenes, I don't know, are amazing.
There was a moment where I dodged debris.
That was pretty crazy. But some of that, like they had the scene the beginning where like the bolt got away from her. It was just
That's a bit of a fan service.
Those are just like it's 3D. It wasn't that like invasive though. It wasn't like a Resident Evil type of thing.
I do come from advice. I did read a review about the physics of it, and one of the things at one point they need to go from the shuttle orbit to the International Space Station orbit. And that you couldn't make that on his back, like doing the kind of degree orbital change, because if you got the Earth, you know, the space station is, you know, a few degrees.
I think you off can just say it's axis. Difficult.
Yeah, like they, that. I don't it's think really as hard. Advanced. Keep it simple. I don't think as advanced as that backpack was. You have enough fuel to make that transition.
Again,
because that's a huge amount of fuel.
Again, it's a movie. I thought they did like I said, like our friend Jake, he's really into science and space, and it's like
and engineering.
I would say it's pretty much approved as far as
it did have some good reviews. And like from the NASA, there was a NASA EVA expert that was talking about a lot of the EVA maneuver stuff.
I really liked. Well, so it's called Gravity, and 90% or 95% is showing how Sandra Bullock's character operates without gravity, and you get to see like how difficult it is, because like when she's being pulled around by George Clooney, they constantly have to like tug and yank at each other just because of how
it's like cracking the whip on like a roller rink, if anyone knows that
reference. Well, yeah, it's just like having slack and then just being yanked like constantly.
Yeah.
Acting was great.
Yeah, I love George Clooney in this
George
movie.
Clooney's
George
awesome,
Clooney
yeah.
was so because he's just
he's
like
so
this
fun.
He's just like this calm, collected like guy, and at the end, or you know, not at the end. I was expecting him to stick around a little longer. I was sad that he went away so early in the movie, but of course he come. This movie was awesome because you didn't know what to expect. You didn't know what was going to happen, and so when you think she's going to die, when she like you didn't you like she could die at any moment. You don't know when she starts turning off her O2 and listening to the lullaby. You're like, all right, this is probably it.
And then it feels like it, and it feels like a good end.
And then George Clooney comes up and is like, oh, he's alive. And then it's like, oh, wait, no, it was her imagination. But that was so well done. I like that a lot because it just came out of left field. And I don't know. I feel like movies like this really have the opportunity and the ability to really remind the audience what movies are capable of. And that's showing us something really new that you haven't experienced, bringing you to a new world. Mm. A lot of movies can get stuck in genres and like stereotypes and archetypes. Where it's and you judge it based off that, and it's really kind of saturated. Movies like this kind of remind you the magic of movies and what it can be.
I agree. That's what I love about this director, and what I loved about Children of Men is because it presented situations and stories and characters. He just presents them in such a unique way that just like in the beginning, it was like completely silent, and you could just tell like everybody was just like. You couldn't eat any popcorn or anything. Like, there's just this lull of just like anticipation, or like you just don't know what's gonna happen, and it's not like intro, blah blah blah, movie, blah blah blah.
One thing I have to say about the audience when we went to see this, I don't know if my sense of humor is weird or broken. People were laughing at some weird moments that I thought were like, this is a very like interesting and powerful moment. And people like, there's like a frog came across the screen at the end.
Though and everyone was, like, some people, I do it too. Like I laugh when I'm nervous or anxious, and I want to relieve some of the tension.
It's
you laugh
like,
at it.
It's kind of like when you laugh at a funeral. And it's not a funny occasion. It's just like.
To me, it didn't seem like that way. To me, it seemed like there was like some genuine laugh. Like I don't know.
Well, at the end, it was about like shit kept getting thrown at her.
Yeah,
and they were just like, oh
people,
my god,
people
like
people couldn't relax in their seats because like she could not get out of this cat. Like it was drowning her, and then her suit was burning.
There
were
fire, and then there's weeds.
The weeds thing. Like I don't know, but there are even other points. One, she's still in space when people are laughing. Like there's not really a funny moment.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe I'm just jaded.
There was the Looney Tunes Martian that came out. Yeah. I think some people giggled at that. There was one point where I actually did giggle at something. I forget what
it
was.
It's fine if you like. I'm fine with like internally chuckling at movies.
Yeah.
But when you're like, it's like okay.
Flashback to Iron Man 3. He's a stage actor.
It's just like you are in a crowd. There are other people around you. And they may perceive things differently.
See, I was surprised because, like, in that theater, when I go to see movies, I hear a lot more talking in the audience. And besides the two people that were behind us, there wasn't really much talking at all. And I was surprised by that.
It kept you on that edge of your seat. And then the sound also, because it was so silent a lot of the times, like, people have a hard time. They're like, oh, I can't talk.
Yeah. And I'll direct the conversation back to science. Because, you know, in it, like the initial disaster, if you will, that was caused, it was the Russians fired a missile at one of their old satellites. I don't, you know, for whatever reason, which I think, I don't know if that's ever actually happened, but
I think they actually do that.
They might. And they were talking about, you know, how like that, it went, like the debris from that hit other satellites, which caused this big debris cloud.
Yeah. There is actually a theory or a name about that it's based on.
And well, they I saw, and this was like, I think probably a month ago or something, some people showed they had a graphic showing a actual satellite that got hit, and they showed its debris cloud and what happened to it over the course of, like, you know, it was
that show you like GIF? Was that me that showed you that?
I don't know, maybe. Okay. I think it was on Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And, like, it showed its debris field and how it changes over the course of, like, I think it was, like, 500 orbits or something, and how it starts small and sort of gets shotguns, and it just spreads out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they showed it that compared to all the debris that's in orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of amazing that we haven't had a disaster like the one Gravity that caused some catastrophic disaster. I think
there is still a lot of space out there, though, like where that is, but it's, we keep putting more satellites up, and it's going to get more restrictive. And
there is talk about putting up satellites up there that do a lot of cleaning, too. I did see some.
It's going to be like in the movie WALL-E when he finally gets out of the atmosphere, and there's just so much crap on the top of the atmosphere.
Yeah, no, I think it needs to be better. Like, we need to be able to, like, intentionally... Like, when a satellite is done, we need the ability to burn it up. Like, we need the ability to push it into a destructive orbit and have it burn up, and, you know, whether it be, you know, crash into an ocean somewhere.
Yeah. Well, that's what they should do, is just send it out.
I don't think the amount of fuel, because a lot of satellites are in low Earth orbit. You lose track of
that, though, and then...
Yeah, then it's in low Earth orbit, and the amount of fuel that you would need extra to push it out of orbit versus just nudging it into a destructive orbit... You know, it'd be better to have it burn up.
One last question before we move on. What did you guys think about the time, the runtime? Because it was only 90 minutes, and I think typically...
I think that was the perfect
one. I love 2 hours. Shorter movies.
I think if this one was any longer, I would have started to dislike it.
Yeah.
Because like the amount of bad incidents that happened was the right amount. They didn't overdo it.
Yeah.
With the, like, oh, shit, this is where it's all going down.
You start to be like, oh, this is totally unbelievable. There's too much stuff.
And they followed the rule of fives for theater and film.
What's that?
Where, you know, if something happens twice, you subconsciously and intentionally want it to happen a third time.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically follows odd numbers. So if you see it four times, you want to see it happen a fifth. Something bad happen a fifth time to sort of round it out subconsciously. And this one basically had five incidents within it. They had the space shuttle, that initial destruction. They had the ISS destruction. They had her adrift in the Soyuz. They had the Chinese station craziness, and then they had the drowning incident. So we had five major incidents.
I think
if it had gone any longer than that, basically adding a sixth one, then it's like, well, now we need to see a seventh one, sort of subconsciously balance it out in your head.
That's cool. I didn't think of that.
Yeah. I think it mainly comes from theater.
Obviously, but number theory.
It's the rules of 3, 5, 7s or, you know, 9s.
So I just wanted to say one thing. So this was the director of Children of Men, which is a movie I really liked that came out like
2008?
It was 2007. It was when we were in high school. Yeah.
I thought it was 8.
That's something to see.
We were in high school when it came out. It might have been actually late 2006.
I thought it was after high school.
No, it was definitely during high school. Anyway, so that's a movie.
2006.
That's a movie that has, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people in the background. Although it does center around two central characters, but there's like a dozen or so, maybe more, like characters that influence the story. But overall, just like hundreds and hundreds of people. This is a movie, and I didn't realize it until after the credits. Really, I mean, there's voice actors, which I don't count. There's two actors in this movie.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Some
dead people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. I mean, that the fact that, you know, they can have such an engaging and edge-of-your-seat story with just pretty much two people was...
Yeah, and that gives props to Sandra Bullock and George Clooney
for their
acting.
They did really well.
For Academy Awards.
The other fun one that you and I, Wade, noticed at the very end of the credits is that the Mission Control Capcom officer, so the communications officer in Mission Control, was voiced by Ed Harris, who was also in Apollo 13 as the mission commander. Yeah. So I thought that was a fun little moment. But
and you know, it's weird because Sandra Bullock, she hasn't really been in movies that I particularly like.
Yeah,
me
too.
I love Sandra Bullock.
I don't know.
Miss Congeniality?
No.
Didn't like that?
I haven't seen it.
Katie made me watch that.
It's a funny movie.
Head out this moment.
But it's weird because, like sometimes actors can get in movies and play roles that you don't like, and so you don't like them as an actor. So you'll think, like, oh, like Heath Ledger can't be a good Joker because he's not in movies that have good roles or something.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show that sometimes actors can surprise you, and, like, just because they haven't been in a role you like doesn't mean they're not good actors and can't pull off awesome performances.
What'd you think of her with short hair?
I thought it was great.
I thought that was surprising.
Yeah, I thought it fit.
One thing that did cross my mind when she first takes off her spacesuit in the International Space Station is aliens cross my mind because she's wearing like a tank top and
that's what they
like,
wear though.
Yeah, like, so, like spangly. But I wonder, is that what you wear underneath the spacesuit? I thought there was like sort of a like a pullover sort of like jumpsuit that you wear.
Maybe.
But I don't know. It's the future.
So that
but when she takes off her suit, you're saying that her body was CG, her head was real? That's crazy.
Whoa. I feel like bodies were CG except for the stationary shots.
That's the other thing though with the CG, like 90%, 99% of the time, the CG looks fantastic, but there was still a handful of shots where it's like,
it was very subtle.
There it is, CG. I see it now. The illusion's broken, and then it takes me a few more minutes. Like, okay, now we're back to good CG.
That's you though. Like, you're not what my
vindictive, angry personality.
Did you guys like the first person view shots?
When No.
You didn't like that?
It was done better than other first person.
Yes, like this, it does not bother as much for me. I don't better like if Doom. I want to see first person and I want to see my hands, I'll play a video game.
That's what I felt like. It reminded me of BioShock. Like
yes, it did. That's a good point. The movement of it,
just the way it looked.
See, I'm fine with POV when it's sort of as if. You know, when it's POV, it's like you don't see the character's arms or body. You're just front. You just see from their perspective. I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. It's when you start to see, like, you could see the hands gradually, up there. That I don't care for that.
Work for, though, like, when she's trying to grab, like, on the outside and she's trying to grab things. Mm-hmm. You just feel that anxiety of, like,
grab it, grab it.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, it did not bother me as much as it has in other films. Like, with the worst of the mean Doom being horrendously terrible as far as first person.
Because you have the gun in there when they're trying to do the first person shooter.
One thing that I just loved in this movie was the idea of, like, the inertia and momentum in space and how, like, nothing you do, like, you can't swim.
Yeah.
Like, nothing your body does is going to change your motion unless you grab onto something. It's just so crazy. Okay.
Would you see it again?
I would buy it. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Cool. So, but then also,
were there any lens flares?
There was a few. But moving on with, there were a few. Yes.
I loved how it kept going from like day to night. You know, accelerated daytime because they were orbiting.
Yeah. What is it? 26 minutes or 55 minutes to orbit? I think.
So they did have some lens flares when the sun would come up and like interact with like George Clooney. I think was one of them.
Yeah. And though speaking of lens flare, though, moving on. Our next thing is J.J. Abrams has officially said. Yes, I may have overdone it a little bit with lens flare and Star Trek.
I just like his wife was the one that told him. He was like showing a cut of the movie, and she's like, "I can't see what's going on." He's like, "Oh, okay,
I
have to take some."
You're doing something wrong when you have to take out lens flare.
He said that. Did he say anything about the first one, or was it just the second?
I think he was talking specifically about the second one.
Yeah. It's just weird because like. After the first one, everyone's like, wow, there are a lot of lens flares in this movie. And he got to the filming the second one, and he was like, we need more.
Yeah. I can only imagine that conversation with a cinematographer.
That's crazy that they're able to, he had like ILM like take them out. That's crazy that they can do that.
Yeah.
I'm confused, though, because it's already been released. Is he releasing, like, a reduced lens flare edition or something? Like, how does that work?
No, he did it during the making of it.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Like not
so
post.
It's already done.
No, yeah, I know. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Like, so we didn't see
this
the
is a reflection.
No,
we didn't see the version with all those lens flares.
No.
Okay, I gotcha.
But anyway, the other thing that you had posted about, or you told us about, was there's a new trailer out for is it Two Souls?
It is Beyond Two Souls.
Beyond Two Souls, okay.
Video game.
With Ellen Page, who's also in The Last of Us.
No, she's not.
No, she's not.
They stole her image.
That's right.
Basically,
very upset about that.
Yeah, she doesn't have it because I didn't know about the Two Souls one. So when I saw the trailers and stuff for Last of Us, I'm like, oh, so this is the video game that Ellen Page
Are they allowed to do that? Are they...
So she's suing them.
They
I think so.
It's
at
in
least.
This
a
whole
lot of video
gray
games
area.
Do, like, when you're trying to make a person, like it's better to base it on real people.
Yeah, and you get into this whole gray area that we're probably going to get into as we get into stuff with motion capture and more with CG modeling and using like professional actors and stuff for motion capture. Is like the whole idea like, can I copyright my likeness? Can I sue you if you make a video game character that looks like me?
That's crazy. I didn't know I didn't know they didn't use it for that. I thought surely.
No, okay. That's what I thought too.
Okay, but anyway, the Beyond Two Souls.
That's a completely different developer too.
Yeah. I had posted about this game because I saw the trailer for it and it looks really cool. And
I want to buy a PS3 just to play that game.
I love it.
Was it on 4?
Quantum Dreams is the developer. Yeah, they like to push human like motion and motion capture of the face and animation and stuff like that.
Are they making? Is this the one coming with the TV series?
I have no idea.
No.
Okay.
No.
I remember seeing something in 3D or E3 that was looked like Two Souls that was being launched with the TV series.
But anyway, the reason why this game in particular like spoke to me was because it was very cinematic and very character driven, especially with Ellen Page's performance, and then you could interact with it like video game, and it seemed like such a really awesome fusion between the two industries.
Yeah,
and where it could potentially lead in the future, I'm really excited for
it.
Is that a PS4 exclusive?
I don't know.
It's PS3.
Oh, is it? Oh, it's PS3.
Yeah.
I need reason to buy
a PS3 because I still need to play Heavy Rain.
And
Heavy Rain's supposed to be like that.
I just want to borrow one from somebody.
Yeah.
Just play a couple games.
Yeah.
But what did I say? Oh yeah, so the motion capture I thought was pretty spot on, but there was an element that I think isn't quite there yet as far as realism, and when it does get there, we're pretty much going to see film and video games really kind of blend together.
Yeah.
And I don't know, was it the lighting or texturing? You'd kind of commented on that, Lee.
I was just saying that the next generations, their big jump is with lighting.
Yeah.
And that really transcends the way you view and how realistic things look.
Yeah, I noticed that too in the trailer. Yeah. That's the one thing that sort of took me out of some of it.
And also higher res resolutions.
Okay.
Higher res resolutions? Higher res textures?
Textures.
Did you see the behind the scenes for LA Noir? Have I talked to you about that before? Because they did motion capture specifically of the mouth and the face.
I did notice that. Mm-hmm. We had talked about it when it came out.
Yeah, they do that.
Yeah, that's very.
It's like default now. Like Halo 4 did that.
Ever since, I think it was Avatar. It was the first one to do the motion capture of the face.
Okay.
So.
Okay, then the last thing that was on our list for today
that
was
all of us have been playing a lot of
GTA 5.
Woo!
Everybody in the world.
One thing I want to ask you guys, because obviously this is on a 7-year-old console and it looks incredible. One thing that really impressed me was when you're in the submarine and you surface and the crashing waves, you know, the water. It looks so realistic, those water effects.
Which is
but in cutscenes, when you're pouring a drink, it looks like N64 graphics. Like what the hell, man?
That's a good point.
You have your ocean looking completely realistic, but you pour one glass of booze.
That's just fake, though. Like, it's just illusion, the ocean part.
Yeah, I know.
There's some companies that actually specifically make the engine for water.
Yeah, it's probably the most difficult thing to create in CG is to make water look
like water.
So
they might have actually taken that engine from some other company that developed it and then put it in.
There was some other game, I think it was like called Hydro something. It was about a space station or something, and it's all about water because they were showing off how their water engine works and how it all moves. But I digress. GTA 5.
Anyway, awesome. I think it's an awesome game. It's
characters
just,
are awesome.
Trevor is one of the best written characters I've ever encountered in a video game. He's so.
Did you see the like? He's actually based on his looks and stuff off the character. He's Canadian.
Oh, really?
The actor, the voice actor.
I didn't see that. Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. But just like from right when you meet him throughout the game, he's just so entertaining. You never know what he's going to do. He's just like an insane
psychopath.
I like
when he talks smart too sometimes. That's funny. Because you look at him like this hick character, but he like the way he talks about things.
Yeah. Did you guys feel like the game went too far in any particular area?
One thing that thus far, I've not complete. I know Lee and Wade, you have both finished the main story yet. I have not yet. I'm still probably about 25%, 30% to go.
Yeah.
So you got a better judge of where I am. The thing that I had seen the articles from, I was like, oh my gosh, there's this terrible torture scene coming up. And I got to the torture bit. Yes, it was bad. Yes, it was torture. But, like, I thought it was quite tame compared to what I've seen in movies.
Yeah, I've seen that stuff
really
in movies
nasty
all the time.
Like, if this is what people are complaining about. And I know, like, some people are like, oh, it's because you're the one doing it or whatever. But, you know,
well,
if anything,
all,
it made me dislike torture all the more. Which
there are worse things. You do a lot worse in the game than that. You didn't even kill the guy.
Yeah.
He's still okay. And
like murder is okay.
Right.
But torture. God forbid.
Right after that scene, he goes
running
in this long monologue about how torture's ineffective and doesn't work.
Yeah. So that was the one thing that the thing that came up, but I didn't I didn't think it was as bad as everyone was making it out to be.
I thought the game was hella fun, especially the heist. All the heists were really fun, but the one where you like bust out of the bank wearing full military gear and the cops are like, oh, shit. That was so much fun.
Mary, mother of God.
Yeah. Recommend it.
It'll keep me busy.
Yeah, we're gonna try to do some online stuff.
Yep.
Get our crew going.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. I gotta still buy the Xbox Live, but yeah, we'll do it.
Yeah, I finally just got it again yesterday after like a year and a half of not having Xbox Live.
I was playing with our friend Gunner, and we would like take two semi trucks and then just like choreograph like the cops and stuff, and then we'd like go at each other and then like take the cops behind us out with the trucks and stuff.
kind of like World War II or the Pearl Harbor with the planes. Like,
yeah,
playing chicken.
I specifically spend time like maybe about 20 minutes like going around a map, and you can see who's paused, like which players are paused and which players aren't. And like so I would find those players who are paused, and I'd get out of my car and just like shoot them and just drive away.
You can go on passive
you griefer
and not have people kill you.
The other thing that happened, that when Ben was playing, funny thing, he was doing this race, this side quest for Michael, when he needs to race this woman who's
running home and the pissed off
and,
lady.
And she's crazy. I think he had. How many times have you failed the mission?
You're the one, that mission?
Yeah, before that.
Not once. Yeah. That was the first time I was doing it.
Oh, okay. Well, no, so he was running, and I was saying, when you're in the air, when you hit X to jump, if you hit B, you do it's a more like in stride jump and not sort of the weird stop jump that they have that's in it. And if you jump and you hit B, you basically face plant. Like you stop in midair and you just fall flat on your face.
I didn't know this at all.
He didn't know that. It completely took him out, and he totally failed the mission and had to do it all over again.
What was the Trevor thing you were talking
about? Well, like each character you run against this lady. And
oh, I haven't done that yet.
When you're Trevor.
Really? I haven't done
when
that.
When you're Trevor, he like falls in love with her. Because she's you're crazy. You're the one. Yeah.
Oh, man. We're meant to be.
I love when you finally meet Floyd's girlfriend, when she finally comes home and she freaks out, and he's like, I know it's a crazy world, but will you marry me, Floyd? And whatever her name is?
Deborah.
Yeah, Deborah, will you marry me? And then she goes crazy, and then he kills both of them.
And, yeah. That was a great story.
And then Wade.
Hey, Trevor.
Oh, yeah. The guy who's named after me in the game is the most mentally challenged character in all of video game.
Can we stop and get some ice cream?
How about some ice cream?
If the bikers are driving a van, does that make them vanners?
The last time I saw my friends is when you were driving with them to the old quarry. I don't know what happened to them after that.
Yeah. Did you guys go to that pad where you're staying temporarily? Deborah, is that her name?
Deborah's apartment.
Yeah, and you see all the things that were written on the walls and stuff?
Oh, no, I never looked at
it. I think it's like live, love, laugh is on the wall, and it crossed out. It was like eat shit and die or something like that.
Do you notice that thing? There's like the giant sketch of her up above the mantle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this huge 24x36 portrait.
Really smashes her. Anyway. Yeah, awesome game.
Anyways.
Yeah, it's very fun.
So any other closing remarks?
No.
All right. Sign us off, David.
Yes. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to the IsCast. We'll be back again next month. So until then, we'll see you later.
Bye. There's always got to be one.